Welcome to the SportsTech Research Podcast. We connect research-driven professionals working within the sports technology ecosystem. The show is brought to you by STRN, SportsTech Research Network. Your host for today is Christophe de Meij.
So, hi everybody, welcome again in the SportsTech Research Podcast. Always very much looking forward to these type of conversations. And this time I'm speaking to Joe Chatuk. And Joe and I have been in touch for a while. Joe has been a neuroscientist, athlete, coach, and entrepreneur. But as always, it's more smart to let the people present themselves. So, with this, Joe, happy to have you in this episode, and please introduce yourself.
Thanks, Christophe. Hey, it's great to be here on the SportTech Research Network. I've been following you guys for a while. Great work you're doing. So needed. This field is going so fast. So
many thanks.
Doing what you're doing, and thank you for having me. My name's Joe Chatuk. I'm a former racquetball athlete. Peaked at number 6 in the world in the year before I retired, and coached. And I have a master's in sports science. I have a PhD in neuroscience focused on motor learning because it's all about how we move. That's kind of my jam. And did some clinical research in movement disorders at CU Anschutz with Parkinson's and Huntington's and some stroke rehab and stuff like that. So anything that has to do with movement, athletics or clinical. And did my graduate work in the Nebraska Athletic Performance Lab, University of Nebraska. And fast forward a few years and here we are.
Yeah. And of course, I'm also interviewing you as the founder and CEO of Panther Tech. Maybe for the listeners, let's first deep dive a little bit into what you are doing. And also interesting to hear a bit, what's the story behind, like how and why did it all started?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, thank you for bringing that up, Panther Tech. That's the reason we're here. As you know, there's not much money in B-level sports if you're not what's considered mainstream. And so anybody that plays pro racquetball had to do other things, teach or run clinics or coach. So I trained people at the Denver Athletic Club, and athletes would fly in and would do 6 days, 2 days, and then they'd fly it back out. And then when they came back a month or so later, they had lost all of the technique skills, all the ground we had gained, in kind of tweaking their mechanics. I was like, wow, I wish there was a way we could save that sensation of optimal movement that they need to experience, replicate, recognize, and then retrieve over and over and over. That's the process of motor learning. And of course, there wasn't one. There wasn't a way to do that besides words and metaphors. And, you've done it, right? Like pretend your arm is a piece of spaghetti or
spaghetti or tree. I've been a physio in my previous life. So I know a little bit those type of tips and tricks.
Words do not explain what movement feels like. And I'll go off on a tangent here. But if an alien came down from Mars and you had to tell him what salty tasted like, what would you say?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, wow. Yeah, I need to think about it.
Yeah.
Yes, they don't know the word salt. They don't know the... Maybe, you tell me. I don't know.
I love it. Well, that's the point, is that words are dumb to explain the sensation of human movement. And so we try to translate it that way. But anyway, long story. There needs to be a better way to teach movement and have the athlete to be able to retrieve the positions that lead to optimal movement, or that really, let's say, augment or like kind of kicking the side of the head of, oh, that's what you mean, coach. And a lot of times you get the aha face, like, oh. And then the cool part is, as a coach, you get to see your athlete spend the rest of the practice trying to retrieve that, because that's the thing, right? Anyway, so I forgot the question, but...
we started to talk a bit about Panther Tech and the product you created to actually do what you were just explaining.
That's right. Yeah. So Panther Tech is the product is called CAT, Kinesthetic Awareness Training, which is exactly what it sounds like. I know you can't see me, but I'm holding it up. It's a tiny body-worn device offers vibratory feedback on the body. Essentially, it learns what you teach it. It learns a position or a movement in real time, stores it, and then teaches it back to the wearer with vibrations they feel through the device, often on the body part that needs the attention. It's not a new concept. Haptic feedback has been a while for a long time, but the idea that, and we have two patents, and a European patent pending, the idea that it's used to capture and train in real time, as opposed to some other data collection things, which is you do an exercise or a drill or a practice or a technique, and then the next day or the next week, you look at what you did. And that delay is just, that's not how motor learning happens, right?
Correct. Right? Yeah, correct. And it can be used for a variety of movements, both for, I would say, injury prevention, performance, as rehabilitation purposes, if I understood correctly. Was it like a conscious choice also to go for the haptic way versus, I don't know, visual or auditive feedback systems?
Thank you for bringing that up, right? I'm a nerd out on you now. Okay, so here's the story. If you ever tripped up a curb with an armful of groceries, right? Two things. The brain makes a, and your viewers know this already, but your brain makes a model of itself where the body is in the world, right? So if you've ever tripped up a curb, it could be that your brain's model of where the curb was in the world was wrong, or your brain's model of where your foot was in the world was wrong, right? Yeah. Aside from all the other psychosocial factors with attention and performance and all that stuff, those two things, when you trip up a curb, you are immediately recalibrated as to where your body is in the world. And sometimes violently when it's, you know, when you garage sale, when all your stuff goes everywhere, right? There's not a doubt. So your brain's continually updating this model. All the cat does is it artificially or augments and the process of the brain's natural updating this model. You want to do an experiment with me quick with your viewers too? See if they can do this?
Yeah, why not? We only have listeners. But,
I know, that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, so have your listeners hold your finger out as if you're pointing at something, okay? And when I say go, I want you to close your eyes. Don't do it yet. And you're going to touch the very, very tip of your finger to the very, very tip of your nose and freeze and do it quickly. Ready? 1, 2, 3, go. Okay, so two things happened for the listeners out there. Number one.
And me.
you hit the tip of your nose with your tip of your finger, and you felt immediately validated. And then in a subtle kind of way, like, yeah, I know where my nose is. I know where my hand is. Or if you missed it, usually a little bit to the left or the right, you had an urge to fix it. Why do you have that sudden urge to fix that? Because that's the feedback telling you, well, this is not right. My map's wrong. I need to update my map, right?
Right.
So that's the mechanism that haptic feedback provides. It's just another way to deliver sensory input from the world through a different sensory motor pathway into the brain. Do one more. Take your two fingers, close your eyes, and touch the tips of your two fingers right in front of you. And then, I can't even explain it. Anyway, think about putting on a necklace behind your neck, right? Oftentimes you're kind of fumbling around. Anyway, so the cool part is, Christoph, is that if we do that again in a few minutes, you'll be better at it because we just immediately recalibrated, you know, a short time ago. So that's the mechanism that kinesthetic awareness training works on. That makes sense?
Yeah, totally. Then the next question, of course, would be like, okay, where are you with the product? Where do you see the most use or the most valuable use cases? I mean, where are you at this moment? And maybe link to that also, of course, it's also like a podcast about the relationship between research, industry, and the application side. Now, of course, we understand a little bit what is the rationale behind, but maybe also interesting to hear a little bit like what type of validation for the technology have you been doing? Mm-hmm. Or are there any other people or organizations that could help you out? Because that's also one goal of this podcast, of course. Share the challenges, the objectives, and maybe listeners with expertise that is complementary to what you are doing could reach out. So,
absolutely. Thank you for all that. That's a lot of questions, but let me get in there.
Exactly.
So we are in. We're sort of, as a company, we're ending our exploratory phase, you could say, and we're looking for a few partners in pilots and/or funding to test the applications in real world. And then also do some clinical research. So we are partnering with a few companies. One is it's a neuro rehabilitation center in Omaha, and they're doing some clinical case studies. One of the other things is that the cat is remote control, and I realize they can't see it. But if I were a patient at home and I had my cat device and I was controlling it by my phone, a clinician at the clinic could control the system from their laptop.
Oh, wow.
So essentially, it's telerehabilitation. So one of the first things your listeners might could do if they do, are they any kind of movement educator, a physical therapist or a personal trainer, we're looking for them as research participants to essentially log in, use the CAT, it's a single visit study, use the CAT system and offer feedback on the user interface. So if you're interested at all in seeing how this device works, what it does, that's an easy way to do it and it helps us out too.
So people can imagine what it is about. It's one or more sensors to be attached on the body. There is an application for the user, meaning the athlete or patient, and the practitioner or clinician, he or she has what has a dashboard on the laptop or something?
Laptop. It's just remote control from their computer. Yep.
Yeah. And what are like the key parameters or settings that can be set? Is it like the accuracy level or the way feedback is given? I mean, timing related. I mean,
right. Excellent yeah. Questions. Yeah. So I mean, I wish people could see it.
Yeah, we should do video. I'll switch to video podcast as for now, maybe.
Yeah. So the reason I talk so much about verbal instruction is because it doesn't do anything different than a movement educator does already. So if I were to train you, and let's have the viewers or listeners hear this. Let's say I want you to a certain arm slot in pitching, baseball pitching, right?
Yes.
Is you would put the device on your arm or your shoulder, whatever body part you want to draw attention to or awareness, right? The athlete would get into that position and you press a button on the app. And the system learns that position within an adjustable range margin of error. Each plane, X, Y, and Z, can be individually upweighted or downweighted to allow more margin of error in that plane or not. For example, let's say we put it on the sternum of a tennis player, and you want to allow rotation around the Z axis, right? A rotation, but you don't want to have them bend over or tilt. So you can upweight or downweight those by just sliders on the app. So anything that you can do with your voice, the nuances, try to tweak movement, you can do in the CAT. And it remembers that. And then also it collects data and that kind of thing. I'm glad you brought that up. One of the key challenges we've had is educating the consumer or the market or the researcher or the scientist on what it is and what it isn't, right? So people say, what do you do with all the data? Well, you do the normal things with all the data, but we're primarily a feedback product, not a data product. There's much better ways to collect data at a higher sampling rate and, you know, motion capture and computer vision and all that. In fact, I had an hour long early with an investor, and after the hour long presentation, like, so you have a whole database of human movement that you compare this to, and that's how you program the CAT? I'm like, no, not at all.
No.
It's live capturing of movement or positions. That's how people actually learn, right? And then teaching that movement back to them. So it's like a...
It's personalized. It's personalized based on the inputs, of course, from the end user, how he or she is moving, and then on the other hand, some settings that the clinician or coach or whoever it is provides, and that determines the way people can train with the device.
Right,
is that correct?
Right. So you mentioned partners. Let me tell a couple of really exciting things. Is we've got we got invited to do some step two proposals for NASA. Because astronauts don't have the same sensory motor inputs that they do on Earth. And so they're looking to speed up the adaptation of the astronauts as they transition from this gravity to that gravity. Think the moon or Mars or back on Earth, whatever.
Yes.
So three things happen in space. One is you lose proprioception. The other has to do with bone density and fluid distribution and all that. But anyway, the one that we are working on is develop a kind of a series of, call it, rehabilitative exercises so that astronauts can do either in the ship, and they call it post egress, is before you get out of the ship. So that's a really cool product. We find out in a few months about that. But one of the cool other fields we've been working is, and believe it or not, is rodeo athletes, professional barrel racers, because a certain way that you hold your hands and you hold the reins, Paralympic archery, because obviously anytime that movement needs to be precise, right?
How accurate is it actually? Because that's probably something that people would question, like, to what extent can very small movements be detected? Because often when it comes to motor learning, we all often talk about very small differences.
One degree. It's very, 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 very precise.
Yes.
But because you can control the parameters, just like a human needs to operate in a wider bandwidth of movement variability. That's why the margins of error is so important.
You can provide a little bit of feedback, but also a lot of feedback for that 1 degree difference?
In the future, you will. But I think what I'm trying to say is, and actually, that's a good point. I'll switch gears a little bit. You ever have a backup warning system in your car when you know you're about to hit the trash can?
Yeah.
One of our patents covers it, delivering gradient feedback to give you the size and direction information of a target that you're trying to achieve. So think about a bubble of accuracy. What I was talking about in margins of error is you can expand or shrink that bubble of accuracy based on the motor learning stage of your athlete. For example, developmental athletes, you just got to get the ball above your head if you're trying to shoot, right?
Yeah.
You know, for elite level athletes, a smaller bandwidth, degrees of freedom.
Yeah. Joe, where did you see the most relevance up to now? Because I can think of so many applications. I'm coming from the world of basketball, for example, shooting, free throw shooting, or whatever, whatever it is a typical example. So you can go into many different sports, many different movements. Also, I was questioning like the link with pain, low back pain and those type of things. Just anecdotal references, let's say. Where do you find the most value up to now?
That's fantastic. Yeah. Almost any movement can be improved, and it doesn't do everything, of course, but I think the most effective thus far, gosh, golf, baseball, basketball.
Yeah.
I guess we haven't really ranked them because it's so impactful when you get an athlete or a patient to feel a certain way that they haven't been able to identify before, and then they can practice on their own. So I often tease, it's like the aha face, like, oh, that's what you mean. And it works better than any word, right? So the good news is, yeah, it has a lot of applications. The bad news is it has a lot of applications.
Yes, well, I was about to say, what has been the experience in implementing the tech? Because having the technology and indeed having a potential very wide use, then also comes with the challenge, of course, like, okay, where to implement it first? And how to search for that problem solution fit, as I like to call it.
Yeah.
And yeah, depending, of course, on where you go, people want more features and tell me and so on. And then you need to decide, okay, which direction to go. So what about the actual implementation within, take for example, physical therapy probably is one of the key domains.
Yeah.
How does it go? What are the barriers and facilitators?
Yeah, excellent question. So it took us about 6 months to learn this, but I'll just explain quickly. What we have, the back end of the app is an advanced dashboard. It has lots of different settings. You can do anything with it. And we found the most success with coaches, people that get it, people that, no offense to, you know, people that coach on the weekend, but not the high school dad that volunteers, right?
No, of course.
The people that know about movement and have a specific knowledge base behind it. Now, those people get it really quickly. What we've found, though, is that if you have, you know, 50 kids or a couple of athletes or, you know, you have half an hour to work with skill, we need to make it quicker. So we develop modules, and we call them modules, but they only extract out the settings that you need for that particular skill. For example, with the rodeo folks, there's a module for how do you hold the reins, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For golf backswing, there's a module for proper backswing of your lead arm. Yep. There's a module for keeping your head still in hitting, pitching. Yep. We worked with a couple of pilots for, pop-up timer. It's called Matt Serrani. He's got it's kind of a neat integration with tech. Is it times, this is baseball, but it times the length of time it takes for a catcher in baseball to catch a pitch and then stand up and throw it and release it to second. So we piloted it with him. Nebraska Athletic Performance Lab has a couple. Their bowling team's working with some things, which is interesting. University of Nebraska Omaha is doing some clinical research with a couple of them. And then also, interestingly, and this is what I meant by some of the experienced users, Skip Latella with neuromuscular training, and that's a whole other field you could spend a career then, right? like a neural priming. I see you nodding your head.
Of course.
We've done some piloting with him. So to the long, long way around to answer your question is we've piloted with a lot of different things. We've had a little bit of success or a lot of success in a lot of different areas. But as a startup, we need to pinpoint our product market fit to do the fun things later, right?
Yeah, correct.
Anyway, so golf is a big one. Baseball and what was the other one? Even some military applications at the end of a rifle to teach, you know, people that break down doors and got to get the bad guys. It's a certain way that you hold the. So a lot of different things there.
Yeah.
Again, I forgot the question.
I was asking about the barriers and facilitators for implementation. Like often people don't get it. They don't have the time. They don't have the knowledge. They, of course, sometimes they don't have the resources as well, or they have to work with a variety of clients at the same time, and it makes it more complex to integrate that technology within the process. All the things that have nothing to do with the product in itself, but let's say all the other personal or organizational factors that play a role.
Well, the good news there, and this is important, I'm glad you brought that up, for people to understand it, it doesn't make you teach or do anything different. And it's only about, I want to say, a half hour to learn how to use it. And not even that, actually quicker, especially with the modules. I can just hand it to you and there it is.
Is it a product that once people experienced it, then they also understand what it is actually about? I can imagine that's often the case. That's often what you hear from people. Is that is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. Yeah. So we put on the end of a bat. Think about batting practice. I realize I'm a U.S. baseball, but put the end of a bat. And it's 1 minute of, say, neural priming before you take batting practice. And what that means is, just like you touched your nose and just like you sort of had a really precise calibration of your model of where your body is in the world, it's 1 minute of maneuvering the bat or the golf club or the racket right before you go to practice. That's sort of some of the data, that some of the validation stuff that we're looking for some partners with.
Yeah.
So, after you get it, you're like, I get it.
Awesome. Also wondering, Joe, you have been through some phases of product development, obviously, and then also bring this to market. Often startups also collaborate with other entities to make it happen. It could be design firms or engineers or product developers or software developers and so on. How did you, let's say, manage the process and what have been your experiences, or could you share some advice maybe for others in setting up those partnerships?
Yeah, I can give you advice what not to do. Like, I think it's really hard. It's really hard to bring a product to market. Mm-hmm. There's 1,000 things that have to go right. I don't know that I have any words of wisdom except find the people that are smarter than you to help you.
Yeah.
That's probably the one thing, but we've had a few mechanical engineers, electrical engineers. When I was in graduate school, I never had extra beer money. I would, pay one of my colleagues to, hey, work on this for me for a couple hours, and that's kind of how we started. I did build the first one 12 years ago, I think, on my coffee table with the little kids' electronic kit, and when it worked, I was like, okay, there's something here. So that's kind of how we got started.
What are the, let's say, current challenges or hurdles to overcome, as I often call it? Maybe, I don't know, from a product development or commercial point of view, I don't know. Yeah, feel free to share any of those, and happy to...
Sure. So, as a startup, lean and mean, and what we're lacking, probably throughout the whole process is expertise and resources. And that could be expertise and funding. Mm-hmm. Is it, you don't know what you don't know, and there's only one of you. I can need 10 of me. And then oftentimes you'll get conflicting advice in the same hour, and sometimes by the same person.
Oh yeah.
What?
Interesting.
The sad thing is, there's nobody knows the answer. And this is funny. I make fun of myself all the time. Like, I am making decisions every day that I'm not qualified to make. And I'm the most qualified person to make them. And that's just the truth, right? Because I know the most about the product. So What I've learned is to bring in some smart people. So we now have a really sharp guy, business advisor, that's been kind of working with directions and partnerships and helping us now, our focus, our product market fit. But anyway, that's kind of the business end.
Have you been in incubators or accelerators or, I don't know, startup networks in the local ecosystem or?
Yeah, actually, we made the last round of the NBC Comcast and Stadium Ventures. We made the last round of those two, didn't get picked. And again, I think partially is that is we hadn't yet, it can do everything. So what do we do first? So that's kind of what on the entrepreneurial end is, and that's partly what our next phase is.
Making that will be an important strategic decision indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have some exciting partnerships that might be coming up. And this kind of leads maybe to more of the tech research is a couple of companies I'll mention is KiloGear, which is, I don't know if you've heard of them. They're think about a weighted vest that has, 30 pounds on it. And so they're a micro version of that. They've got a, let's call it tight fitting clothes that have smaller weights in them that you sort of extra resistance load on the body, just normally wearing it all day. So it's not like a ruck, right? So we're partnering with them. We're in talks to partner with them on some of their products. The other thing about the CAT system is that it's data agnostic. So we give the feedback now on the body position and space. But our patent also covers giving haptic feedback on force play data, let's say weight transfer, how it feels to do an accurate swing or a kick, muscle activation. So are you achieving the right muscle activation or deactivation? And that has implications in physical therapy and learning to walk with a prosthetic, right? We experiment with some eye movement data, right? There's a proper way to watch a pitch coming in or a tennis ball coming in and a not proper way. And so, and you can see why I'm distracted, right? There's so many things you could do. Right?
Oh, exactly.
But anyway, I just want to mention a couple of those companies.
Yeah. Interesting. Is there any advice or learnings or other things of that sort that you would like to learn from maybe other disciplines, other sectors maybe? That's also one of the goals for me with the STRN is like, okay, within academia, often, physios and sports scientists don't always talk to each other. And then there are many other disciplines that have relevant expertise. But of course, that's also the case between academia, industry, and the field of sports, between sports, different professionals, and so on. Is there anything that could help you accelerate the project? Maybe also startups in orthopedics or other fields that could help you out, or maybe people that have experience in how to come up with a strategic decision as the one you are about to make, like where to focus on first.
Like where to focus? Right, yeah. Right. Yes, yeah. All of those things. Let me start with what's been really exciting for me is to learn from other people who are experts in their craft experts, people that are continually learning. So by getting to experiment with archery and figure skating and the bad guys that knock down the doors and rodeo and all the baseball and all the golf and track and all that, I get to see the tiny nuances of eliteness in their sport that I would not have access to. Right. Yeah. So believe it or not, and I know you can't see me, but when you do archery, you don't just like open your fingers and then let the bow go. Like there's a real subtle shoulder retraction that happens. It's fascinating. And so we worked on that a little bit. Anyway, so yes.
You get a lot of feedback from the field experts, I can imagine, telling you what type of movements they want to register, how, what's the accuracy level that is needed. Probably also a lot of feedback in terms of how the haptic feedback actually feels for them and how it influences their behavior.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, any one of these things can be a whole career's worth of studying the biomechanics of it, right?
Of course. Yeah.
And not just the data, but so here's the thing about motor learning is that you need to know, you need how it feels, what the body actually did, not what you think it did, and what the outcome was. And so motor learning only happens when you have those three things at the same time. Oftentimes, in data collection, you get what happened, what it felt like, but not what the body actually did until next week when you look at the data or whenever. So imagine shooting free throws and not knowing if the ball went in or not, like this thought experiment, right? Mm-hmm. So the cool part is within seconds, when you're in a coach in a space with a coach and an athlete or a clinician and a patient, within seconds, you can see the three of those things coming together using the system. And it immediately goes to, this is the problem I want to solve. This is the movement pattern I want to change or maintain. And it's, I just realized that just now. Why that's so rewarding is because those three things come together at the same place and the same time. If anyone's interested in that process, then please reach out, because I'd love to learn from any of the experts. It's so refreshing to listen to people that, like I said, are experts in their field.
Yeah. Hopefully some people listening can indeed reach out to you and express their interests. Could be from a clinical standpoint, from a sports performance, of course, motor learning here is the key term, of course, standpoint, but also researchers, I can imagine, who would like to use the device for their own research purposes. All right, Joe, we are almost coming to the end. We talked a little bit about you, about the product, of course, the principles behind the applications, the challenges in implementing, and so on. Anything else you want to highlight?
And kind of we talked before as who are some of the most inspiring scientists, and I had to trim down my list a little bit, but
and yesterday apparently was the day of women and girls in science.
All right, then conveniently the first four on my list are women. We got Gabriela Wolf. Her work has been fundamental for 20 years. Anders Ericsson, who I knew personally, he passed away a couple years ago. Sion Bylock, Rachel Seidler, a NASA researcher who's been a kind of a mentor of mine on these grants. Obviously, Ramachandran Mahaly, he's got that really long last name with Flo, and Rob Gray, and a few others, of course. But I just science is cool. I just love learning about.
You need to send me those names, and we'll add it to the But who is not to push you to mentioning one name, but why these names? What has been so inspiring?
Excellent, because their work reflects how you can use its application. Right, it's not a molecular level that you have no control over. So think about these researchers work with the one thing. There's one factor that when you're competing or human performance that you have control over, aside from thousands of things you can't control, the weather, the ref, your mood, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, whatever. The one thing you can have immediate control over at every point is your own body. That's why it's so powerful to me. That's why these researchers kind of figure out what are the environments and techniques and the dose type and timing of feedback and information and all the variables that can affect how you perform. And that's where the control lies.
Perfect. With that, on that note, we'll be ending this episode. It was great talking to you, Joe. You are so passionate about what you're doing. Of course, the listeners indeed can't see you, but I can tell them it's great to see what you're doing. I think it's the first time we actually deep dive a little bit in a solution that is focused on motor learning. That specific. So yeah, I hope the people listening enjoyed the conversation. And yeah, of course, we'll add your contact details once we publish the episode. Feel free, of course, to reach out to Joe. Same to me, of course. Feel free to suggest maybe other people that I should do an interview with, or topics, or whatever. Feel free to let me know. Yeah, and with that, I would love to say goodbye, and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Christoph, so much. Please keep doing what you do. Like I said, the sports tech world needs this, especially with all the tech coming up. And thank you so much for having me. Really had a great time.
Well, thank you so much for this. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This was a SportsTech Research Podcast. Podcast presented to you by STRN, an initiative of Ghent University. Did you like this episode? Make sure to check out our website, strn.co, and let's get in touch.